Welcome back to Library Voices SC. I'm Katie.
I'm Pamela.
And we're here today with Dr. David Linkus. He is the new director of the University of South Carolina's SLIS program. That's the School of Information and Library Science.
We are super excited to have you here with us, David. You have come here directly from Syracuse,
New York, yes.
A little bit different up there?
It is. It's state fair time, so we're missing many deep fried foods at this point.
But state fair is about to be here, so
I know.
It's not too far off.
Looking forward to it.
But in the meantime, you have a little bit of humidity and heat?
I was in Chicago last week at Dominican University, and I was telling people that I've come to my new Catholic realization that hell is not only hot, but humid. And so it's a whole new appreciation of my spiritual being.
It definitely gives us an opportunity to be patient. All right, so you're adjusting to the weather and to heat. How about campus life? Is it different than where you were before? Is it similar?
Well, there are certain things that are always going to be true about a university. There's never enough parking, and you're always trying to figure out where to buy overpriced logo material. But you know, it's fantastic. First of all, it's a beautiful campus, and it is really the entire city of Columbia, which I'm getting used to. I'm not used to the idea that to do enrollment, you have to get in the car to go talk to someone. But it's been wonderful to be on the Horseshoe. It's been fantastic near Russell House. We're in Davis College, which was the first building built on the campus after the Civil War.
Yep.
And so that is at one time lovely and at the other time challenging. But it's been fantastic. And, you know, Syracuse was a middle-sized private university with about 20,000 students. And now I'm at a public university with 35,000 students. And so in some cases, it's much bigger. And in some cases, though, you still find places that are really small. You
know, but absolutely.
Why are we still doing this? Okay.
Sure. Because it's the way we've always done it.
Yeah. Well, right. And Syracuse has those, too. So we're figuring it out.
I find that that's something that happens everywhere I go. There's always somebody somewhere saying, but that's the way we do it.
You know? Yeah. Well, and it's, I get the beauty for the next, I'd say year, they'll give me these 2 months to at least to be the new guy and to have the new eyes and say, why don't we do this? Can we do that? And so I'm trying to take advantage of that new perspective as long as I have it, because then things just, you know, they start settling into a routine and such.
So you think you can have that new perspective for at least a year?
I hope so. Well, so far, there's been a new thing every day that's popped up.
Hey, that's great news.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As a graduate of the SLIS program, I think that's outstanding. I think that we can't improve or get better without those new perspectives.
Exactly.
So change is inevitable, and it happens daily, and it's necessary for improvement.
Yeah, and one of the things that really attracted me is that Sam Hastings, who had my position before, did a great job building a really good program, building it up, and it's now really poised to grow, and working and talking with the faculty, talking with alumni, talking with the administration, there's a real strong desire to get moving, to move forward and to grow. So, yeah, it's cool.
That's really cool. I'm curious, though, how does SLIS fit into the library? This is totally off the cuff. How does SLIS fit into the libraries on campus? What's the relationship? You have a lot of different libraries at USC, Thomas Cooper, South Carolina. How does the School of Library and Information, what's that relationship?
It's really positive. So a lot of what I've been, so I'm now 2 months into this position, and it's been 2 months where I really tried to get outside when I can of Davis College and go meet and greet. And so I've been over to Carol, I can never pronounce it.
It's a good one, isn't it? Caroliniana.
Caroliniana, thank you. Gorgeous facility and building.
Yes.
And had a great time meeting the Dean of Libraries and taking me on a whirlwind tour of, of not only Cooper, but down to the Moving Image Archive and Laboratory.
That's a fabulous space.
It is.
If nobody's
it really
ever
is.
Been, it's so worth the trip.
Absolutely. And so I think the answer is we have, in all those cases, it's been a really good relationship, happy on both sides, looking to get their staff in doing some teaching for us and certainly advising, getting our students out with internships and working in those areas.
Right.
So having seen many a relationship between a library and a library school around the country, this is really, we're on good footing.
Great. And speaking of collaboration, what about the State Library? How do you see the relationship between SLIS and the State Library, the potential for growth and relationship building there?
Well, I think it's fantastic. I've in my career had some opportunities to work with state libraries, lots of different ones, and always found them to be very open to figuring out how they can support libraries. Some you find are more emphasized supporting legislatures.
Right.
Some you find that are more about just pass-through grants.
Sure.
Some do a lot of continuing education. And finding that right balance can be tough. But
sure.
And I started working with folks here in South Carolina when I was working with the State Library of Illinois on
nice.
A project called I Lead USA.
We're very familiar with it. Yeah. We're very proud of our two teams.
Absolutely. And so I see real strong partnerships. One of my particular concerns is how we do sort of continuous training and education of librarians.
Mm-hmm.
Not just a class here and there, but really talk about, you know, the world's changing and how do we change service to meet it. And I found ready partners to have that conversation.
Absolutely.
And so we're really looking forward to creating partnerships. We've had great conversations with Richland County Public Library. I'm off to Beaufort in a few weeks
great.
To go speak there. And everything from one, putting interns in, but we're working with real-life projects in our courses, even up to the point of, are there possibilities for joint faculty appointments? Are there possibilities for creating curriculum programs that we can deliver in these great new spaces that are being built? So, yeah, it's and I haven't found a closed door yet, so.
That's excellent news to hear.
Yeah, you know, one of the things we always talk about is that, you know, one of the big changes is that the library has moved from a place for librarians to do their work to a place where communities do their work.
Mm.
And that means that, yes, librarians can be there to help, but oftentimes that means librarians can leave it on a regular basis. And hopefully we'll all run into each other on the street and begin sharing and collaborating. But and that's really what's happening, I think. And what I'm fascinated by is, having looked at libraries around the world, but even around the country, the kinds of changes that we're talking about making in libraries, community orientation, community aspirations, not just the resources and materials, while those are important tools, but really what we're trying to do, learning on all stages, that happens in really big libraries, really, really big libraries from New York Public and such,
right.
to really, really small libraries with even part-time one-person librarians. And South Carolina represents that spectrum. I mean, it goes from, you've got Columbia and you've got Charleston, and then you've got rural areas where
you've
there's
got Lee County and Jasper County and Dillon, and you're right.
Exactly. And really talking about how they can collaborate and work together. So
that's exciting.
It is. I love it.
I love collaboration, and true collaboration is hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy. Somebody has to give up something for it to be successful, and you can't always get what you want. All these things are very true with true collaboration, but in the end it's about the purpose.
Right.
What's the end result? We got to start at the end.
Yeah.
Sometimes
compromising is a huge deal when it comes to collaboration.
It is.
Well, I've never had an idea that hasn't been improved by sharing it with others. Now, some people say, "Oh, but you get a great idea, it goes through a committee, it dies, whatever." And I said, "Well, you don't have to listen to everyone, but it's bringing those different perspectives you have on it, and you know,
sure.
well, that makes sense from this, but what have you thought about that?"
Right.
And you're absolutely right. A true collaboration involves an investment on both parties.
Yes.
You know, saying it's one thing, going for lunch is another thing, but actually putting FTEs, putting some funding behind it, putting time on task. And it, you know, in times resources aren't exactly flowing like magic or anywhere.
Right.
But ultimately getting a benefit out of it. And so, once again, that's another thing where I've been really heartened, is that talking with libraries of all different sorts, publics and academics, and so far, the state library, a willingness to get the job done and not a territory saying that's ours, that's ours, that's ours.
And that's refreshing.
It is.
And it should be refreshing to everybody out there listening
yeah.
that you're seeing that within a very short period of time of being here. There are a lot of great things coming out of South Carolina, and to hear that doors are open and there's a positive attitude about moving forward, that's huge.
Well, and I was blessed when I was up in Syracuse with some fantastic libraries around me, public and school and academic. And a good part of my career, if anyone's ever had to read my books and such, is telling the stories of things I run into. And it's already great to see that there's on the ground these kinds of stories we can begin sharing, from looking at the idea of reaching out to diverse communities from the state library and continuing education, mm-hmm. to looking at public libraries that are doing true facilitation around solving community problems, to looking at how do we deal with moving images. I mean, just a whole diverse way that there's a story that's to be told. And I think there's a national and international audience that's interested in hearing it. And so my goal in my role, but also to help the school become that place that we work locally, we begin to have an impact statewide, but that we become a way of sharing what we learned nationally and even internationally, getting the faculty on the road, doing things like podcasts and such, and really looking at a way that we can say, you know, there's interesting things happening in South Carolina, and you can learn about that if you're in Italy or if you're in China or if you're in North Carolina, God forbid, they can learn something.
Well, and as far as podcasting goes, this is new for us. We're on podcast 6. But it's improving every time, and I highly recommend libraries consider podcasting for something for their community, if not just for themselves. It's a great way to bring people together and to have conversations and to share those conversations.
Well, and libraries are increasingly in the information production business, not just librarians producing them, but helping their communities develop them. Mm-hmm. And we've had one of the another attraction for me to University of South Carolina is we're in the College of Information and Communications. Mm-hmm. And our sister school is the School of Journalism and Mass Communications. And we've been talking for many years in public libraries about hyperlocal reporting. That idea of when newspapers are going away, or they're going to once a week, or they're whatever it is, that idea that we can provide what's going on next door and what's going on next street. And libraries can be a place to really get that information out and share that information.
Yes! I totally agree. It's nice to hear somebody else say that. That's great. So, You've kind of covered a lot of, you've touched on a lot of topics we were going to ask you about, your vision of the future of public libraries. You've talked about the way it's going to change, the way the librarians' jobs are going to change. Let's talk a little bit more specifically some of the things that are happening in libraries and how do you think it's going to change? Digitization, preservation, two different but complementary parts of what libraries are offering.
You know, it's interesting that when I was thinking, first of all, I'm not a huge futurist. I know people claim that I am, but
they do.
I know.
They really do.
But I'm a currentist. I want to, you know, the kinds of things that we need to do today to make sure that we have a future, right? So while I may talk about the future, it's not like, well, when we get flying cars, we'll do this. It's more to the effect of, if we would like a future, we better start doing this.
Right.
And some of those things, I was remarking that if you look at libraries, there's this sort of negative stereotype or bias, usually within the field, that they look at things like technical services, cataloging, collection development, that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And they say, oh, that's old school, right? We're busy doing makerspaces and fun things like that. And those are fun, don't get me wrong. But if you look at what's happened with the back-end operation, the collections, materials, digitization, et cetera, something amazing has happened and we haven't even noticed it. We've gone in just under 50 years, even accelerating in the past 30 years, from the idea that libraries own stuff. We own a book, we own materials, we own journals, and we warehouse them and we take care of it. But we began introducing with things like online databases. When the internet came in and we really finally embraced the fact that that is, in essence, part of our collection. When we began looking at building digital collections, when we began looking at a whole series of things from produced to licensed to leased, we went from a closed system, our stuff, to on the back end, if you look at the collections of libraries, to a hybrid collection, where it is doesn't almost matter where it comes from. As long as it's got a URL and we can point to it, we're going to try and figure out how to incorporate it. That's led to really interesting areas around metadata and cataloging and all the stuff that may put some people to sleep. But the bottom line is, when you walk into a library, what's on the shelves is only the beginning. That really the libraries are now structured to deal with it wherever it is. And so it's not unusual if you walk in and say, boy, why don't we have streaming movies here? For a library, go, well, we know how to figure that. If we can find a license, we can bring it in. On the same side, that service side, the public-facing side, where you talk about reference, and that's turned to makerspaces and different kinds of support service, the idea of helping people start up businesses, all of this.
Sure.
We have a ways to go on the hybrid. When someone walks in and says, you know, I happen to have just gotten my Nobel Prize in chemistry, is there anything I can do to help you? That's a weird question for us, as opposed to, here's a book by a Nobel Prize winning chemist.
Sure.
Oh, I know what to do with that.
Sure.
Right? And so Imagine if we begin opening up that end where we talk about experts in the community, when we talk about different resources, people with different jobs, backgrounds, farmers, the idea of people with a history, local communities, making that available in the same sort of open way that we've looked at our collections. That's an amazing change. Mm-hmm. And that's the future, where the library is really that community hub, whether that community is a community of scholars and academia, lawyers and law firm, mm-hmm. medical practitioners, what have you, or people who live in a certain community. That's the kind of transformation. And what we're seeing is that investment comes back to us positively many, many fold. Investment-wise, we see it in terms of the public library in the city of Toronto did a study on economic impact. $1 goes in, $5 of economic activity comes out. But we also see it in buy-in. We see it in participation. We see it in communities coming in. We see, you know, people coming into the library going, I never thought a library could do that.
I hear that a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
On a very regular, almost daily basis, I hear people say this. I didn't know the library did that.
Right.
Or could ever do that.
And so I think that's the future that we're pushing to, but it starts today by opening
up
that question.
So what's the today steps?
So the today steps are listen to your community, get outside of your building, find out not what your community problems are. We as librarians, we're service-oriented. We want to solve everyone's problems.
We want to help everybody.
I know. But what do they want to be? Where do they want to go? Is it around economic development? Is it around making sure in Syracuse, one of the big issues was, I have a kid, I work really hard, I put him to school, and they move away.
Sure.
Right. Making
how do you this keep
right.
them home?
How
give
do you
them place right. to work?
We got a lot of Gamecocks coming out of Columbia. How do we keep them around?
Sure.
How do we talk about economic development? Is it keeping the culture? Is it learning about new ways of doing things? Is it simply connecting people, talking to people who are doing a really small specialized task here, but there are hundreds of them around the country? This is a place through technology where we can provide that connection. And so it is having community conversations. So once again, just as one example, Richland County Public Library, when they did their strategic plan, it doesn't start with the library can do this and the library can do that. They have a whole section on, we want our community to be economically resilient. We want to end poverty in our area. We want to work on literacy in our area. And it wasn't the library's contribution. It was, we're going to be part of, back to that collaboration
Correct.
Partnership, the sheriff's office was part of putting that plan together. Local community, local governmental agencies, businesses came in, and they were all part of putting together the strategic plan of the library. And so it became really a de facto strategic plan of the community. We see that in Topeka, Kansas, libraries that are truly embracing sort of what is the narrative, the story, and the strategic plan of your community? Yes, government has a role to play. Yes, business has a role to play. But libraries are that last place, womb to tomb, mm-hmm. you know, that can be a true gathering place of aspiration, needs, and people to talk about what they want to be. That's the future.
Yeah.
And, you know, that happens throughout history. When we look at libraries, when you know, everyone got together and said, you know, these tablets are a pain in the butt, they're not very portable, can we look at scrolls, please? And you know there was a committee somewhere arguing about mobile technologies and what do we do about frayed scrolls.
Right.
But that you know, when we talked about libraries moving from storehouses to academic centers to literacy to, you know, Wayne Wagon wrote a fabulous book on the history of public libraries in America, and he says, you know, remember when we turn from the 18th to the 19th century, libraries were having this huge thing about, should we cover literary novels? Because that, I mean, it was, if you read his descriptions, it's like the pornography of the day. It's you know, there's a quote from newspapers saying, you know, these literary novels are horrible, they you know, help, you know, girls think beyond their place and boys think beyond helping on the farm so they can, you know. And now, because libraries were proactive in thinking about talking what communities need, talking about what they could be, being a voice, mm-hmm. now the idea that your library doesn't have novels, that's, why would you ever do that, right?
It's absurd.
Yes. And it, but it didn't happen naturally. It happened as a product of engagement and conversation about current needs, not simply planning for what new gadget will be available in 10 years. I'm all for gadgets, but that's
oh,
not
yeah,
least,
I have to say, yeah. I like gadgets. I do.
Yeah.
But I like finding ways to have them as useful
yes.
learning tools.
You have a robot.
I do. I have several robots, several drones, and a couple of 3D printers that just came into the State Library. And we plan on showing them and showcasing them and talking about them and teaching people about them, because there are far too many times where a library will purchase something like a 3D printer,
right.
put it on a table,
right.
and walk away.
And not know what to do with it.
And don't know how to set it up, or don't know how to use it, don't know how to start the conversation and invite the right people in, or let people explore hands. So for me, and that's a big part of what I do, but the community conversation is such a big part of, I think, what we all should be doing.
Yeah.
Even our paraprofessionals and our clerks, and having conversations and asking people and engaging them about their community and about their library school.
Exactly.
My husband's at SLIS right now as a graduate student, working at the South Carolina Library.
There you go.
So we're well tied into the Gamecock Nation right now. Anything exciting at SLIS?
We got a couple of, I mean, a lot of excitement. I mean, from the really near-term thing, we're right in the middle of doing a book drive for book and materials that we can send off to schools and school libraries in flood-ravaged Louisiana as a way of sort of giving back when they helped us out. But that's part of a larger initiative around things like Cocky's Read, where we go across the state and promote literacy. What I love, and once again, what attracted me here, is that I have a faculty and staff and school that don't just want to study how you change the world, but want to be part of changing it.
Yes.
So, you know, those kind of initiatives are exciting. Looking at, we're getting increasingly into data science and looking at how we look at the data and interpreting and understanding that world is exciting. Looking at, in school libraries, how we truly look at being an educational partner. Those are very exciting. We've got great faculty. Our plan, and we're having conversations about the exact shape of it, but it's to grow. It's to say, look, when you talk about the future of librarianship, yes, that means preparing quality librarians. Absolutely.
Sure.
And that means preparing them to work in libraries, sure, but also to work in other settings, to work in government settings, to work in for-profit settings, to work in consulting and working and doing all sorts of things. But we have a generational problem with libraries. Problem may be the wrong challenge. And that is, you know, if I could wave my magic wand today and suddenly we doubled the number of library science students, that'd be lovely, except I would probably have more, you know, 300 out of work librarians, which doesn't help, right? Law taught us something, which
right.
is overproduction is not a good thing.
Right.
But what we do need to do is not only prepare the librarians quality to work in those settings, we need to prepare the principals that are going to hire and work with the school librarians.
Mm-hmm.
We need to prepare the mayors who are going to hire and work with librarians. We need to prepare the businessman and the analyst and et cetera. And so we're looking at our undergraduate program to grow the
Nice.
Undergraduate program in information science, where they will carry a lot of the core values and understanding of the values of librarianship out beyond where libraries can necessarily go. So that's exciting, is that we're looking at how do we grow an undergraduate to grow really a whole culture of people who value things like privacy, like access, like equity. And some of them are going to become librarians, and some of them are going to become folks who work on Wall Street, and some of them are going to become mayors and principals. So that's exciting. Talking about, once again, how do we take the great work we're doing here? Our faculty are doing, as an example, the flood.
Yeah.
Our faculty got the most internal grant funding of the university to go study how we deal with emergencies with flooding. The fact that FEMA came and they set up in public libraries. This is an amazing story.
It is.
And so now, how do we support our faculty for taking that message and taking it around the country and around the world to say, wait, this is a look at the interesting thing you can do in times of crisis. Here are some really specific stories and learning out of it. That's extraordinarily exciting. And so, you know, and then having doctoral students who look at that research in a further stance. So the bottom line is, it's still all about world domination through librarianship.
I love it.
That is still very much my goal. But we're gonna expand the army. We're gonna expand the recruits that we bring into that issue, and hopefully in doing that increase the diversity of the students and the diversity of the populations we serve and an understanding of the diversity of the populations we serve.
Well, it sounds like you're on the right track. Certainly to evoke change, it's easiest if you start within. So you're talking about starting within the community with all the different aspects of a community. The same with early literacy, which has been a passion of mine for years. How do you really affect early literacy and improve it in a community?
Mm-hmm.
By going into the families' homes and making sure they have books, they have a library card, but you evoke it by starting inside.
Right, and it's
And that's what you're talking about. Yeah, you're talking about delving, getting into...
helping the individuals and
inside
and helping the community.
I had a great mentor, Jeff Katzer, who once said, he said, you know, change is like heaven. Everyone thinks it's a great idea. Nobody wants to go first. and so...
That's a good one.
But we're at the point where it really is opportunity land for us. It's not a quick change where we're going to close. It's more like, hey, I never thought we could have that impact.
And so, impact. It's all...
It is. It's all about impact.
It is.
And so faculty need to learn that as well. And I'm blessed with faculty that are anxious to make a difference and not just to make a publication list. And so it's a great opportunity to move forward on that.
Nice. Okay, well, we are running long because you're fantastic and wonderful, but I'm going to let Katie wrap us up with maybe drag a few interesting tidbits out of you before we leave. More interesting tidbits.
Definitely. I have a really fun question for you. So I've been reading a lot about you lately, and I've been wondering, can you tell us some really cool stories about your travels around the world? You've visited the Vatican Library, you've been to New Zealand. I mean, just tell us all these really cool, just tell us some of the stuff that you've been through.
Two or three top picks.
Well, the Vatican Library is great because the Vatican Library, first of all, I found out that the secret archive that, you know, Dan Brown writes about and such, the reason it's called secret is actually from the Latin, which means separate. So it's a secret archive in that it's separate from the library.
Nice.
And I kind of went in there assuming that it was going to be, you know, like, and here are these 300 copies of the Bible, and look, there's 300 more. And it's not an ecumenical library. It's actually a library devoted to the monograph. It is about the history of publishing and the book. And in fact, they took me into this newly restored 15th century reading room. It's gorgeous. And you sit at this table and you look, and there's these frescoes all around the ceiling. And it really tells the tale from writing the material to picking the reeds to producing, you know, material to printing to selling to buying and then finally pleasure reading, which was sort of this ultimate... end of it. And so you see it, the walls literally are the story that and the mission statement. And then you walk 5 minutes down the road and you're in a 5 petabyte data center with glowing blue floors where they're liquid cooling multiple computers.
What?
Because
glowing
they're digitizing them all and digitizing materials from around the world and then providing them out. And yeah, literally glowing blue floors. They promised it. I was not going to be radioactive at the end of it. But, so that was absolutely fabulous. And what I love about it is not only do they have the library that's integrated into the Vatican, but there's a library school that talks about how to produce it and preparing librarians throughout Europe, but particularly in Italy, to do it. Mm. So it's that whole circle from service and teaching and education rolled together, which was fabulous. New Zealand was great. I gave a keynote in New Zealand. After keynotes and conferences, they actually get up and sing to you. So it's very sort of disconcerting.
Sing?
Oh,
yes,
I would love that.
They pick a song and they all get up and sing at you. And so that was
that maybe was very we should true. Try that here.
But they had built, I was talking to some folks who had just built a new library, and they built it in this one area of the city that used to be a forest. But all the forest was chopped down, in essence, for smelting iron. They used it for heat. And so what they did when they built this new library, they built it to get its history. And so they built it full of steel, because that was the area. Mm-hmm. And then to decorate it, they did these huge mosaics of trees, because it used to be a forest. But the way they did them is on something like a 20-foot high wall. They built scaffolding, and they put up... masks, you know, sort of masks, meaning, you know, areas where you didn't want the paint to go. And they would have the community come in, children, family, adults, whatever. They came in, they could climb on the scaffolding, dip their hand into paint, which was mixed with the local mud, and put handprints all over it. So when they removed these masks, there were these 20-story high trees that they was literally the hands representing the community
That's
they were serving.
Amazing.
Yeah. Oh.
So
incredible.
Yeah, so those kinds of stories, those will take you back. And and then you go over to the Melbourne Library in Australia, and they have an amazing photo collection of around pop rock and punk rock at the time. And so you get a real different feel, and I love that diversity as you move from community to community. And then I was in Bruges. See, and now I've got to say Bruges. You got to say it right. and they took me into the library, which is a beautiful public library. Everything's RFID systems, modern literature. And then they said, well, would you like to see our few treasures? I said, sure. So they, sure enough, brought out 13th century manuscripts, and you could open them up and you could feel the parchment. They would show you the lead lines that the monks would use to keep the wording correct.
Wow.
And the gold embossing that was here. So it's a fabulous. I mean, we work in the best field ever. I mean,
no doubt.
You know, we're a noble profession out to save the world and be good, and we do it across the whole spectrum of, you know, human endeavor. So sorry, probably more than a few stories, but
no, I enjoyed all of that.
And
thank it, you.
And what a way to end, an inspirational, fun end, and we can all dream of our own travels.
Definitely.
David, thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule. We really appreciate you coming and visiting with us and sharing your stories and your vision with all of South Carolina. And I understand we now have international listeners, so we appreciate everything that you're doing at USC. If there's anything we can do to help, call us.
Oh, and the short answer is always looking for good ideas and opportunities. So,
okay, everybody. I'm Pamela.
I'm Katie.
And we're keeping it short
and sweet.